In this reel of Seawall movies, the boys go into the future to go back in time to play with the Borg in Star Trek First Contact. Upon returning to the present, they head to the theater to see Mark Wahlberg's Contraband. As for the future, they once again head to the present to go back in time to check out the trailer for Men in Black 3. In news, they do some Muppet Blu-ray release talk and a crowdsourced Star Wars remake? All this, and Steven has Skype issues on the 88th reel of Seawall Movies. Timeline? This is no time to talk about time. We don't have the time.
The past.
You telling me you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
The present.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
The future.
Welcome to the future.
And I'm telling you, it's great here.
You're listening to COL Movies.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a brand spanking new reel of COL Movies. My name is Jeff, and I would like to introduce my assimilated co-hosts, Steve and Ray. How are you guys doing?
Well, almost sounded like you said stimulated.
Assimilated.
Okay. I'm doing okay.
Well, since I'm borging on my Bluetooth headset because my internet went down, I suppose it's accurate.
So you are assimilated. Hey, what do you know? Let's go into the news.
News on the mark!
I'm sorry. I love the Muppets. So when I saw a story about their DVD release, DVD, Blu-ray, etc. release, I had to jump on it, especially with coming the different packs they have. And I will announce which pack I will be using. Of course, I'll have a single disc DVD, and apparently there will be a set with and without a copy of the soundtrack. And I think it's a downloadable one on that one. Next, they have a two-disc edition with the CD Blu-ray combo pack, which will include the longest bloopers reels ever made in Muppet history, we think, which actually is on the single disc edition as well. Disney Intermission, Scratching the Surface, a hasty examination of the making of Disney's The Muppets. Explaining Evil, the full Tex Richmond song. A little screen test on the way to the read-through. Deleted scenes, audio commentary with Jason Segel, James Bowden, and Nicholas Stoller, and some hidden Easter eggs. But they're not done yet. They've got one last pack they refer to as the Waka Waka pack, which has pretty much everything from there, including it also includes some spoof trailers. I believe and the Waka Waka pack includes the complete soundtrack. And you get a Blu-ray copy, a DVD copy, a digital copy, plus the soundtrack. So I'm getting the Waka Waka pack. How about you guys?
Wow. I mean, that's a lot of stuff.
It'll be my first Blu-ray, too.
Oh, yeah? Sweet.
Yeah. So once I do finally get a TV and a Blu-ray player,
mm-hmm.
I'll pop in the Muppets and sit on the couch and eat popcorn and giggle to myself.
Gotcha. Cool. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I feel I need the soundtrack to go with it. I don't. So I would probably get either just the regular two disc one, I would think.
Yeah. I mean, I liked it, but I don't know that I need all of that.
Okay. So I'm the only,
and I'm not a Blu-ray person yet, so okay. I don't really know the difference yet.
Well, you know, sure I recommend nowadays if there is a DVD Blu-ray combo, that it's probably better to get that. Mm-hmm. That futures proofs everything, so that when you do switch to a Blu-ray player, you'll have the Blu-ray instead of having to worry about a DVD being upscaled. That's just my humble opinion. So, if anything, get the two discs so you get the Blu-ray. So, anyways, I thought that was interesting. That's coming out March 20th. So, in 2 months. Can't wait.
Sweet.
Yeah, I'm a little child. Speaking of a little child, Star Wars Uncut, Director's Cut, is up on the web. A 2 hour and 3 minute and 53 second video on YouTube, which features basically this guy goes out to the internet and says, "Hey, internet, hey, let's try reenacting Star Wars," and just lets people go into their imagination and basically recreate scenes however they want to. And I do mean however they want to.
Right. I think we reported about this when it first started. So basically he was crowdsourcing the entire production of this. And the way the website worked was that there was sort of a whole timeline of the whole movie, and you could, you know, log in and commit to or see what parts were available, what parts they needed still. Like, you know, if they had finalized a certain section. And I think it was, I forget what the time limit was. Maybe it was like 30 seconds.
15 that it says in the article.
Yeah. And they did that specifically, I think, for legal reasons. Since no one clip was longer than 15 seconds, it helps them avoid a lot of copyright stuff. Now how that works once it's all stitched together, I don't know.
Because for all intents and purposes, this is basically 2 hours and 3 minutes and 53 seconds of 15-second clips.
Yeah, different 15-second clips, yes.
And some things were majorly different, such as the oil bath scene.
Yeah, I only got to watch about 10 minutes of it.
Yeah. Did you get to the oil bath scene?
No.
Okay. Let's say this. It gets a little risque.
Mm.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of bits and pieces, and I actually watched the whole thing.
So watch it now before it gets taken down.
Yeah, they mentioned Eric Eisenberg wrote the article that we're linking to. It says, "I must say that I'm curious about the legality of this project, particularly because it does use some actual footage from Lucas's film and other parts, just the audio. Knowing how hardcore Lucas and his team of lawyers are, I can't say that I would be too surprised if this version of Star Wars is gone by this time tomorrow. What that really means, though, is that you should watch us all today and be amazed by what real passion can do." You know, I'd almost think that Lucas might say, "Look, we got to take this off of YouTube, but let's put this on that Star Wars fan films page, like the official page," because for all intents and purposes, this is extremely transformative. Nobody's going to watch this in place of the original movie. There's no way anybody would do that. So yes, there are bits and pieces where you got some of the original footage and you got some of the original audio, but because of how transformative it is, if it does get taken down, I would hope that I think it was Chris Pugh, P-U-G-H, was the guy who uploaded it, that he would, you know, take that into court and say, "Hey, this is totally fair use," because I think it is.
Lord knows he can't send it to Mega Upload anymore.
Nope.
But yeah, it's. I'm sure I'll try to watch more of it. If not, I will attempt to save it for posterity so I can watch it later.
And that's all.
I just want Lucas to have a good sense of humor about it. Maybe put it on his next DVD release or whatever he's going to release.
The 3D versions of the trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on. Into the past.
You're telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
All right, so we're going to the 21st century, so we can come back to the 21st century so that everything can be all nice and fine and dandy. It's Star Trek First Contact. Rotten Tomatoes ratings 92% fresh, 83% audience. Wow, really?
Well, there's
a little surprise at the audience rating.
There's a certain contingent of people that just don't like the Next Generation. So,
So they're just
There's a contingent of people that just don't like Star Trek. So I don't think you're. I'm not shocked completely by it. I'm actually shocked that it got as high on the critic side. Regardless of it being a good movie, science fiction always gets a bad rap. They always get worse reviews than they deserve usually.
So directed by Jonathan Frakes, starring Jonathan Frakes, Patrick Stewart, Brent Spiner, LeVar Burton, Michael Dorn, Gates McFadden, Marina Sirtis, and James Cromwell. But yes, all of those were important, so
without the pig. But this I do believe this was Mr. Frakes' first movie directorial debut. I know he had directed some episodes of the show, but I think this was his first movie. And with that being said, I would like to say that this was the first Next Generation movie that felt more like a movie and not an episode to me, like an overly long episode.
But the first overall Star Trek movie, or just
Next Generation? Just Next Generation.
This was the second Next Generation film.
I know. The first one felt like an episode to me. It felt like a really long episode, like, you know, one that I could have watched on TV.
Yeah, I think it had to do because of all the on the Enterprise D, and it was pretty much the same exact set, and they honestly didn't do much to change a lighting or something like that for the cinematic feel. But when they were like in Generations, when they're when Kirk and Picard are on the planet, and well, I suppose even when the guy was in the space station too, it felt like a episode. Yeah, it was pretty bad, but it was only this. This is only the second. Now, if I could see that comment, if it was like three, maybe fourth, but
mm-hmm.
I mean, and it was on a new ship too, which means that they basically built everything for the movie instead of having it also for a television show.
Yeah, well, I'll jump ahead here and say, yes, I like this movie. And I think this is generally considered one of the better of the, if not the best of the Next Generation era films. It's just one of those things. I think, growing up, I'd spent a good many years getting used to Star Trek movies, you know, and you had Generations, which was the first one, you know, for me that went from a TV show to, you know, I didn't watch the original Star Trek on TV when it originally aired. Obviously, I wasn't alive yet. So by the time I sort of had any sort of cognitive ability to remember things, you know, Star Trek was always a movie thing first in my brain,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I know I saw Star Wars at the movie theater in 77, but Star Trek, the motion picture, was like one of the first movies I actually remember the experience of going to see the movie, you know, 1979, you know, I was a bit older. So I remember being totally into it because I won tickets to see it.
Oh, nice.
So I was really sort of just excited about that. And I remember starting to watch a lot of the older Star Trek episodes because I had won tickets to see it.
Agree with you on that one. Didn't win tickets.
Right. But in my brain, you know, Star Trek was always a movie franchise, you know, even though, I know that it wasn't. It started out on TV. It's just the way. So I had this whole cinematic experience of watching all the movies. Now, granted, they weren't all great movies. Some of them were downright horrible. But bad or not, they always had a cinematic feel to me. When we hit Generations, having watched all of the Next Generation on TV and watching Generations on the screen, it just didn't seem like it jumped up in that cinematic feel. And then when this came out, and I do believe that the new ship had a lot to do with that, not only because they had to build new sets and everything, but they also sort of, I mean, a new Star Trek ship. It's like unveiling a new Bond, or you know what I mean? It's like the new Enterprise. It's a big deal in that franchise. It's a huge deal.
And we had just been watching the Enterprise D for 7 years before then.
Right.
So Enterprise D was old hat and it was a television thing.
Yeah, and I remember when the Enterprise D was a controversial thing, the way it looked. You know,
but they didn't really. But movie though, I don't remember them really going all that into the fact that this was a new ship.
No, they just made some small references here and there in the movie that you know they were shaking her down and you know we barely knew this ship. We're about to blow it up, which I was kind of like, wow, this ship didn't even last one movie. Cause you know, I thought they were pretty much going to have to blow it up, but, yeah. So the ship, I think, was a big deal as far as its initial, like, sort of popularity with non Trek fans. You know, I think those people could really care less about, and the fact that, I think this story is very accessible to non-Trek fans. You know?
I don't specifically see that, but I mean, I also think that it's such a good movie just in and of itself that I would suspect people would just like it, because there's a lot of references to the actual original show.
But do you need to know them in order to get it? That's the thing.
I suppose people could probably just be like the whole cutest thing. They would be like, yeah, whatever.
Well, I think those people get to play the sort. They get to be like Lily. You know, you're sort of figuring things out for the first time, and I think they did a somewhat decent job of sort of simplifying that and saying, hey. We know that at one point this guy was captured and that he's pissed off about it, and that's all they really need to know.
Right.
No.
I mean, this one is one of my favorites, mainly because I got into The Next Generation. Mm-hmm. And, like, I know for some of you this is different, but in middle school and high school, I was watching The Next Generation every week that it came on. I never really did get into the originals, but like you said, the movies started me really enjoying it. So I did watch some of the old ones. It wasn't my cup of tea, but when The Next Generation came out, I watched that religiously. It lost me at Deep Space Nine, just for me. I got lost at Deep Space Nine. I didn't really watch Voyager as much as I probably should have because I did like it. But I do know a lot, and I didn't watch Enterprise at all. So, you know, when it came to these movies, like when I go back, this is one of the movies that I definitely go back to because I always loved the Borg stuff. So knowing when they were coming out with that was going to be all about the Borg stuff, I was excited. Mm-hmm.
The best episodes of TNG was The Best of Both Worlds, Part 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was definitely the peak of TNG.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be really hard for them to top it. And I would almost say that they definitely did with First Contact and involved the Borg as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, the good thing about it is that they pushed the narrative. You know, especially for Trek fans, we already knew, you know, a lot of stuff about the Borg from the stuff that we had seen in the show. So the fact that you're learning something new about them, I think is, you know, they're pushing that envelope a little bit. You know, the whole sort of introduction of the Queen and that whole sort of mindset, like, you know, when she starts talking about the fact that she is the Borg and she's obviously different than the rest of them. You know, she's, you know, emotional, you know. So, and good on Alice Cridge, man. She did an awesome job. She's like one of my favorite performers in that whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of anybody else to play that part now, pretty much. Like, that, she nailed it.
But she wasn't the one who actually played the Borg Queen in Voyager, was she?
No. No. They got somebody else to do it.
Got somebody else to do it. So you don't have to imagine somebody else did. I'm sure, but definitely not as well as
right.
Alice. So.
Wow, there's bees in here. It's either bees or a kazoo.
I don't know. Is Steven trying to talk and for some reason it's not working?
I don't know. Steven, say something. I think we lost Steven.
Because I did see his thing go, it's online, it's online, it's online, it's online.
Yeah, it's like trying to reconnect to him.
Okay. So while we're waiting for Steven, let's go into some of our talking points. Did you know that Lieutenant Hawk was gay?
Initially from the movie, no. But there was a huge sort of controversy. And this controversy goes back to the fifth season of Star Trek, The Next Generation, because there was some sort of discussion with Gene Roddenberry about, somebody posed the question, why were there no LGBT characters in Star Trek? Like, they'd never had any previously. Mm-hmm. And he said something to the effect of, you know, that his thoughts on the matter had dramatically changed over time. That at one point, especially back in the 60s, that he would have never even thought it possible to have that sort of character in the show. But that he almost promised that we would see a gay lesbian character in Star Trek in the next coming season of The Next Generation. Unfortunately, Mr. Roddenberry died shortly after that.
No!
Yeah, so it was left to the showrunners to sort of do something. And we got the, I can't remember the name of the episode, but the one where Commander Riker falls in love with the person in the sort of androgynous.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got that episode, which a lot of people thought was a cop-out. Sort of addressed the topic without addressing it directly.
Because the characters basically were
not male.
Not have a gender. Male.
Right.
Yeah. Genderless.
So fast forward to, 1996. There was no mention of, I guess they were going to have some sort of indirect mention that Lieutenant Hawk was gay. But they decided to take it out. Although there's a series of novels. And one specifically, which is called Section 31, I think is the series, and the title is Rogue. It centers around Lieutenant Hawk, and you come to find out that Lieutenant Hawk is indeed gay and living with his partner on the Enterprise. So it's sort of an interesting thing, and they've never really sort of... although we've seen some sort of gender, I don't want to say gender bending, but some skirting around some traditional gender roles and sort of pushing the boundaries in certain things. I know we've seen some same-sex smooching going on DS9. But I just thought it was interesting that there was sort of this controversy swirling around this character that was in this movie.
But did it honestly, did it really matter when watching this movie? Like, didn't you think that adding something about that probably would have maybe thrown off the story, but like, oh, he's gay, okay. But
it's not really vital to the plot. If they're going to do something, if they're going to even consider bringing it into the story, it has to be done in such a nonchalant way, because the way of you know, the future society that's been presented to us for Star Trek is one of, it really shouldn't be any big of a deal for anybody. There should be no eyebrow raising. It should not be, you know what I mean? It's just one of those things.
Yeah. And, but to me, it's part of it is there really was no point in this movie where that casual conversation, like, you know, he's at his station, Data's at his other, and then he's like, they're just having some idle conversation. And he says, will you and your partner be attending the such and such, or my recital on Tuesday or something like that? You know, that would be a perfect type of situation. He says, yes, we are. We're hoping to really enjoy it or something. And that would be a nice idle way of just saying that. Right. The only thing is there was no appropriate time to do that.
It could have been mentioned in passing. You know, he could have been worried about his partner being on a certain deck of the ship.
Well, there you go.
Know, when it was taken over, you know, oh, the Borg advanced up to this deck, you know, and
Michael's in engineering.
Right. You know, he could have said something like that. I guess his partner has been, after Lieutenant Hawk died, his partner has moved on and has been featured in quite a few other novels. So, you know, there is that. So the character still exists, and in the novels that have been written since. The ongoing adventures of the USS Titan. For those.
Oh, he transferred with the.
Yes.
Riker.
I believe he's their tactical officer. Okay. So, yeah, there's that. And I don't understand your point here about the Vulcan ship being moved.
Okay, so at the end of the movie,
mm-hmm.
Vulcan ship lands.
Mm-hmm.
And they were coming out of the bar they crossed away, and the ship was there, and it landed.
Mm.
Then, you know, I think they cut to some other shot. Then they cut to an overhead shot where you see the bar, but the Vulcan ship's on the other side of the bar.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, when did the ship get moved, and why was it moved? But just my minor little continuity error.
Yeah, I didn't notice at all.
Honestly, this was the first one I noticed. First time I noticed. I'm like, wait a minute, did that move? But yeah, if you rewatch it, you'll see.
Did they list that as a goof on IMDb?
You know what? I don't know. Maybe I need to add it.
Yeah. Maybe you could be the first. It'll be a first for first contact.
Instruction was the creative Phoenix. The Borg crane asks Data how long it's been since his last form's pleasure. He replies that it's been 8 years, 7 months, 16 days, 4 minutes, 22 seconds, referring to when Tasha Yar takes Data to bed in the Naked Now. Naked Now takes place in Stardate 412.09.2, which translates to March 16th, 2364 in current calendar format. While the movie takes place in Stardate 5089.3.2, November 22nd, 2073, which would actually make it 9 years, 8 months, 6 days.
Mm.
Unless he had a...
Those are the kind of goofs.
Experience a year later.
Those are the kind of goofs that really, really hardcore Star Trek nerds come up with.
By the way, it's one of the day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not very good at the comic book nerd voice.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Don't worry. Yeah, it doesn't say anything about it.
There you go.
Woo! I'll have to put it in, anyways. Where were we? We were kind of waiting for Steven. He wants something. Wants to be called back. I think that is the... See, this is where the technical difficulty sign comes in handy.
You need technical difficulty music to play.
Okay, it says connected. Anyways, where were we?
What have we learned?
Oh, I gotta love the comment, I'm a doctor, not a doorstep. from the EMH.
Mm-hmm.
It was always nice to see him. Also, another visitor from Voyager, Neelix.
Yes.
Was the maitre d' or head waiter or whatever.
Concierge. It
was. Concierge. That thing. Let's see, other things. Oh, one of my favorite scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Is Deanna. Deanna, when she met Zephyrin Cochran. He wouldn't even talk to me until I had a shot of something called tequila, where I just had to have three shots. I don't have my quotes up. And then the timeline. Timeline? This is no time to worry about time. We don't have the time.
Yes.
What was I saying?
I don't know.
You're drunk. I am not. It's a primitive culture, and I'm just trying to blend in. You're sure blended, all right.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, so basically, I'm kind of just stalling by quoting some of my favorite lines. Well, Mr. Curtup will miss what we've learned. We've learned that resistance is not futile. Touch can change your perception of an object. Would you three like to be alone? If you're going to issue in an era of peace, pick something ironic to do with it, like a weapon of mass destruction. Borg implants have been known to cause severe skin irritations. Perhaps you would like an analgesic. Don't go criticizing Counselor Troy's counseling technique. If you want her professional opinion as ship's counselor, he's nuts. The Borg are definitely not Swedish. With the safeties off, even a holographic bullet can kill. And believing oneself to be perfect is often the sign of a delusional mind. And for an android, 0.68 seconds is nearly an eternity. And that is what we've learned from Star Trek First Contact. This is my favorite Trek movie, followed closely by Wrath of Khan. Almost wish there was more of the Enterprise in action, like outer shots of the ship, because we see a lot of interiors. But it worked very well for a TNG movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not my favorite movie, but it is my... to me, it's the first one with the Next Generation cast that truly jumped into the cinematic scope. I think this one is pretty accessible to non-Trek fans without knowing the whole Picard, Borg, Luke Utis backstory, which good, you know, I think that comes through because of Mr. Frakes' insistence on watching stuff like Alien and Aliens and all that kind of good stuff before he made the movie.
Alien, Aliens, Close Encounters, Blade Runner, and... because I got barraged by 5 calls in a row about the... Okay, so... Steven is having issues.
Mm.
Just received a text from him. That he got 5 calls in a row about the internet being down in the apartment community. Now he can't get back with us on Skype using the cell. This is really pissing him off. He's sorry. Just carry on without him. So, we miss you, Steven.
Mm-hmm.
I'll text him back to ask him at least to put in his opinions on these so that if anything, you can go to the website and find out what Steven thought about the movies that we are discussing here. So with that, we will continue into the present.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
Contraband. 46% rotten. 75% audience.
Mm-hmm.
Directed by Baltazar Cormacur.
I have no idea.
Starring Mark Wahlberg, Marky Mark, Giovanni Ribisi. I've got something to say about him. And Kate Beckinsale. So basically, I think we've kind of got a little consensus here. It's a Gone in 60 Seconds tale, right?
Yeah, I mean, basically.
Kid brother screws up on a job that was the that got that our hero's old job before he went legit, and now he has to go back and fix it. So, and both of those two movies had Giovanni Ribisi in there.
Yeah.
By the way, were you also annoyed by his sideburns and the high-pitched voice?
I could care less about the sideburns, but his voice kept going in and out of whatever it is he was trying to do. And it was really distracting. But I have I have a much funnier, well, I don't know if it's funny. But, okay, so I went to see this movie on Martin Luther King Day. Mm-hmm. Forgetting that it was Martin Luther King Day and that mm-hmm. there was a lot of people off.
Oh, yeah.
So the theater was actually very, very crowded. So I get in there, and it's a very it's not packed theater, but there's a decent amount of people in there. Lights go down, trailers start to play. And I was tempted to switch out my trailer for next week to talk about this, but I don't really want to talk about it that much. The trailer for Sacha Baron Cohen's new movie, The Dictator.
I have not seen that.
Came on the screen. Well, that trailer opens up with some actual news footage of President Obama giving a speech about Muammar Gaddafi. Because the movie's sort of a spoof of sort of Muammar Gaddafi, Saddam Hussein kind of character. But as soon as Mr. Obama came on the theater and started talking, a lot of the upper middle class white people in my audience started to boo him, and I felt very uncomfortable.
Oh my.
And then next thing it switches to is Hillary Clinton, and they booed some more. Mm-hmm. Oh, Mr. Steven wants a callback. And then the funny thing about this one was then they showed David Cameron. And everybody showed. And I don't think it's because they particularly like Cameron. I just think it's because they have no idea who he is.
I'm trying to watch this at the same time. So
I found funny. So... just goes to show you that the people with most vocal opinions are often just, I just couldn't believe it happened. Anyway, that sort of set my mindset. I was like, I don't know who I'm watching this movie. Who am I trapped in this theater with? But yeah, Mr. Ribisi's accent didn't really bother me too much. What drove me crazy, and I'm guessing it was on purpose, there was a ton of shaky cam, a ton of what I'm guessing intentionally out of focus shots. Like they would, the camera would sort of sit on something like an object or a person, and they would be slightly out of focus, and then it would come into focus. And it did it a couple times, and I was just like, why does it keep doing that? That's really annoying me.
See, I don't really remember that. I do remember some of the kind of jerky handheld cam-ish type stuff, but
yeah,
the focusing I don't remember too much. Maybe they were just trying to make it more like found footage, you know, on-the-spot documentary, first take sort of thing. They didn't know this was going to happen.
Yeah, I don't know. So I don't know. I had some problems with this film.
So we got the, anything else besides the camera?
I mean, well, we sort of said it's like gone in 60 seconds. I didn't think the story was entirely, you know, very original other than it's, you know, I can't remember the last time I saw a movie about smuggling things on a ship, you know?
Mm-hmm. So that was kind of interesting.
Well, I guess it's one of those things where I didn't expect it to be I mean, I was never bored. I was like, what are we going to be watching? Like, okay, they're going to be on a ship, like, you know, while the ship's at sea, while this stuff's on, what is going to be the main, you know? But they did a good job of sort of bouncing around to keep things interesting,
mm-hmm.
you know, to different things and different locales and different stories that were going on with the different characters, all the interactions. So, but ultimately, I found it a little predictable. So,
well, yeah, and I think that comes to the fact where it's a similar story to. I'm sure Gone in 60 Seconds is just the one example that pops into my head, but I'm sure this type of story has been told over and over again. So you kind of get the idea. Yeah, well, they're trying to make up for such and such. They have to. His family is being threatened, or you know, they're still right. in contact with certain things. So there's a lot of things which is just kind of a repeat that we're just trying to do it some differently. Like in this case, it's more smuggling on a cargo ship.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they did a lot more in the threatening of the hero's family.
Mm-hmm.
So, which got just creepy and scary at times, or at least creepy. Like Giovanni Ribisi was just freaking. It's probably the most creepy I've ever seen him be, and I swear to God, it's like he was insane.
Yeah, I mean, he was pretty creepy.
Yeah. So,
But I, like I said, it's one of those things. I mean, I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to. I really wasn't looking forward to going to see it. You know, it's one of those. I think this falls into the what's a good word for it? The reformed criminal genre.
Yeah, there we go.
Somebody used to be a bad person and they went straight, and now somebody that they know is in trouble and they have to go back into their previous life to help them out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, definitely not a totally unique, maybe a little unique take on a not unique genre. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, and again, I did enjoy it as well. So so it's not that it's bad. It just has these like little bits of pieces, which one of the reasons why the critics probably, you know, rated it so low
mm-hmm.
was because this has been done before and it was predictable and such and such. Not to say that it was necessarily a bad movie. It's very enjoyable, hence the 75% audience. So that so it's completely understandable, the ratings on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. But,
If it should be based off of those ratings, should it be a C? I would actually definitely lean towards how the audience says in this case, just because it's like you understand the credits didn't like it, and that's like critical stuff. Mm-hmm. But was it enjoyable? I mean, there's plenty of movies you can find which may be considered bad movies critically speaking, but people just love watching them. It's just fun.
I do want to know what kind of phone his wife had, because she has the loudest ringer in existence.
That was probably one of those suspension of disbelief moments.
I was like, really? I don't think so.
The phone is wrapped up in plastic and being covered with wet cement.
And by a loud ass
all the way truck. Across the way.
Yeah, there's a cement truck right next to it, you know, with its engine revving to, you know, keep the thing rotating.
Turn it off.
Did you just hear that cell phone ring?
In some sense, it was kind of like, he's like, wait a minute, did I hear a cell phone? Like, it's one of those things where it's like just background noise. You just barely hear it and just kind of picked it out. That sort of thing is probably.
What was that?
So, but, yeah. As we go along, we find that the bad guys are just freaking insane.
Yes.
The one guy who they end up giving money to, he actually seemed sane to me.
Who's that?
The guy they gave the money to. I can't remember his name.
Oh, okay.
Like after they picked it up, they loaded it onto his dock in mm-hmm. the bayou or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That guy was sane. In the meantime, Chris Faraday's best friend is going insane and almost kills his wife. And Giovanni Ribisi, well, is insane.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm so. Yeah, not much to say about this besides that. So I think we're ready for what we've learned. Already. What we've learned from Contraband is you got to spend a little money to make a little money or make money. If you want to make a run, you better pay your fare. And that's what we've learned from Contraband. Not much. I actually enjoyed the movie, which is a surprise since I felt like the gun in 60 seconds. Giovanni Ribisi's side burns and voice annoyed me, though not a waste of money to see in the theaters, but you probably wait for the DVD.
Yeah, like I said, it's somewhat enjoyable, but it is predictable. Yes, it is the smuggling version of Gone in 60 Seconds, just missing Mr. Cage. But nothing, for me, nothing in it like fancy cars to make it really enjoyable. So.
And with that short review, we move into the future.
Hi, welcome to the future. And I'm telling you, it's great here.
Men in Black 3, directed by Barry Sonnenfeld, starring Will Smith, Tommy Lee Jones, and Josh Brolin. Agent J travels in time to MIB's early years in the 1960s to stop an alien from assassinating his friend Agent K and changing history. So, now, here's the thing is, I think I have this strange feeling
mm-hmm.
that the two of us have opposing opinions on Men in Black 3.
Okay.
I have this strange feeling because I am stoked. I mm-hmm. love the Men in Black movies.
Mm-hmm.
I am super, super excited to see the silliness and the action that can come out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love the characters of J and K. And I'm down, JK. That's absolutely true to me. So, which means I really need to make sure I have those DVDs because I got to watch them right before we watch them because I'm sure we're going to somehow get this on our list in some way, shape, or form if it doesn't get on there right away.
Mm-hmm.
So, how about you?
I'm sort of torn. I'm a fan of the series. I like the other two movies. I found them enjoyable. But I really didn't expect to see a sequel. You know, I really did. I'm really shocked that Will Smith is doing another one, honestly. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know if we have different, I'm just kind of like, I don't know if we really needed a sequel. That's where I'm at. I mean, I'll probably see it and enjoy it and like it, but, I didn't like burst out of my chair the first time I saw the trailer. You know, it's interesting to see. I think it'll be interesting to see because how long ago was the last one?
Ooh, a while ago. Because it's been a while. And I think we've been pretty much like, oh, that was the end of Men in Black 2, and hey, that's good to me.
Right.
Because for all intents and purposes, each of the Men in Black movies have been really self-contained movies.
It's been 10 years. It was 2002.
Nice.
So it's been a decade.
Mm-hmm. So,
not very many franchises survive a decade span between movies, you know? Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm really going to be interested in, now the weird thing is freaking Will Smith. He does not look like he's freaking aged a day.
He's Dick Clarking it.
It's crazy. He looks exactly the same. I mean, he looks like he could jump into an episode of The Fresh Prince.
I don't know. And I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but you know what? Tommy Lee Jones kind of looks the same.
I mean, I guess, between the movies, at least. I mean, I noticed that they don't. You don't see a whole lot of him in the trailer, obviously.
Well, I don't think there's as much as we might think is going to actually be in the movie of Tommy Lee Jones. Because I'm assuming that there's going to be these few scenes at the beginning of J and K doing their thing, talking to the wall. And then say, all right, I'll see you tomorrow. Right. And he Jay goes off to do some research, finds something that's access to nine. He's like, oh, hey, let me go see K, you know, the next day. K, and he's gone.
Right.
For some reason. And then they jumps back in time. So that's probably about maybe 5-10 minutes in the movie. We see Tommy Lee Jones as K. Then we'll flash back to he'll do his jump and
yeah.
And then we'll see. Is Josh Brolin actually playing K? Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
So we see Josh Brolin as K. Okay. And we see him through most of the movie. And then, you know, everything gets all taken care of. The alien is defeated. K does not die. Then Jay jumps back into the future and sees Tommy Lee Jones again as K. And that's probably for the last maybe 2 minutes of the movie. I mean, I don't think he's going to be. I think Tommy Lee Jones is barely going to be in this movie. It's all Josh Brolin and Will Smith.
I agree. And, well, the thing that we don't know, and while your explanation is completely and totally plausible, I think that, you know, one of the questions in my mind is exactly how much of this movie is going to take place in 1969. You know, he might have jumped back. But who knows? He could jump back to the future right away with Josh Brolin in tow. You know what I mean?
Just be like somehow jumping back and forth in time to somehow prevent this thing.
I don't even know if it's really going to jump back and forth. I'm just saying that one of them ways to continue this series with an obviously aging Tommy Lee Jones would be to replace him with a much younger version of himself.
Okay, instead of having Agent K, we'll just take the old one or the young one.
Right.
And bring him to the future, and then they do Men in Black 4, and it's Will Smith and Jeff Rowland.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Brolin. I said Jeff. It's all right.
That's right.
But, yeah, that could be interesting. But as for the things, is it needed? Did we need a sequel? No, but we'd like to hear more stories about the Men in Black. You know,
right.
Do we need another James Bond film? We've already got 22, but they're making another one.
Right.
Why? Because people like James Bond stories. I think it's the kind of the same thing on that. And
but there's always been very little continuing narrative between those movies. They've always been very much self-contained stories. This isn't until the most recent, really recent franchise that they have really attempted to sort of have things string between the movies. You know what I mean? Especially when you get into a series that ultimately can replace its main character at any given point.
True.
You know what I mean? You have a new James Bond, and it's just sort of assumed that it's not the same guy, you know? It's just a new Agent 007 who's created this identity of, you know, James Bond. It allows them to sort of just keep going indefinitely, and everybody's willing to accept a new actor. You know what I mean? So I don't know if I should look at those as being sequels, you know? So they're not calling it James Bond 1, 2, 3. It's always sort of a separate story.
Well, James Bond isn't even in the title.
Right.
You know, it's Dr. No. It's From Russia With Love. It's Goldfinger. It's You Only Live Twice.
Right.
Honor Majesty's Secret Service. Diamonds Are Forever. And that's where I usually get stuck when I'm trying to list these all off, because it's the more movies I can never remember the order of the more movies. I think it started off with No, it didn't start off with For Your Eyes Only.
No.
Did it start off with... Anyway, that's beside the point. Anyways. So, yeah. Do we need it? No. But and then the thing is that the other two I still consider as self-contained movies. They're slight continuations because, like, in the last movie, Kay retired. In the second movie, they had to bring him back.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're just, now that they're all back together again, the third movie is just another adventure.
Right.
In this case, the adventure is Kay somehow gets killed in the past, so Jay has to go back and save him and come back. It's, again, self-contained story. So I think this is going to be one of those things where, sure, we're going to have the numbers because this is the third Men in Black movie, but I don't think it's necessarily a sequel per se, because it's not like necessarily a continuation.
Right.
It's another story that took place after the last one.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that will be just fine. And you know what? They could probably do Men in Black and actually cycle out and have somebody completely different as, you know, as maybe they're going to have Agent B. You know, the stories with Agent B and X or something like that.
Oh, and it'd be very easy for you to do two new J and K's.
Yeah. You'd probably be like, you know, throw out. I mean, you probably don't even have to have the Agent K retiring type thing. Just have a new K.
Mm-hmm.
Or have, you know, them recruiting the new K or something like that.
Right.
And do it essentially James Bond type. It's type of thing where they just swap these actors out and we just do this suspension of disbelief saying, okay, the old one retired or was killed or something, and we've got a new Agent K,
right,
and work from there. So yeah, so that's what I think we've come to some sort of consensus, but anyways, excitement. I've always been a fan of the MIB movies and I'm excited for another one, plain and simple.
Yeah, and like I said, I've been a fan. I'm not sure the series needs another movie. I do like that we're getting a glimpse of the old sort of MIB organization. My big worry, though, is the Josh Brolin thing. I don't, you know, Tommy Lee Jones has a very, very distinctive look and voice, and it's going to be a challenge for him to sort of maintain that for the whole movie.
Well, and the thing is with that Tommy Lee Jones characters, I really think of. When you think of the Men in Black, like before the Men in Black movies, there was always that kind of universal legend, the Men in Black. They always had sunglasses. They're wearing these black suits and they come up, sir, can you come with me? Mm-hmm. There's this stereotype. And that's what Tommy Lee Jones's character does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it breaks out of it because of certain silly circumstances on occasion, like the eat me sort of thing. But I think it's actually Tommy Lee Jones is more of a character of stereotype versus Will Smith, who's more of the street guy.
He's the stereotypical young rookie who wants to do things his way, like doesn't want to do it the way the old school does it. So I think they're each stereotypes in their own way. But I'm just talking more on the fact of not his character, but just Tommy Lee Jones himself.
Okay.
Has a very distinct, it's like, what's his name? Trying to do Alec Guinness's sort of inflections in Star Wars.
Oh, Ewan McGregor.
Yes. You know, it's not easy to pull off.
Trying to imitate somebody else. And who knows? But, I feel confidence in this.
Mm-hmm. We'll see.
I think Josh Brolin will probably do a good job. We will see, and I swear to God, we need to get this on the list. I don't know whose week it is when that comes out, but
time will tell.
If it's yours, put it on there. It's good. I have the week before.
Sure,
so.
I'm sure it will be in the theater for more than 1 week.
It needs to get on there. Oh, we were ending the show. Holy crap. That was a quick show. Sorry, yeah. Steven. We missed you.
We missed one third of our content.
Yeah, I know. Actually, probably missed like one half of our content because I don't provide. But next week, we're taking a look at Raging Bull. It's one of my favorite pizzas from the Alamo Draft House. Actually, it is my favorite pizza. That's what I order every time. Yeah. So I'm going to have to order a Raging Bull when I go see Haywire, if it's at the Alamo Draft House. In the future, we'll be looking at The Cabin in the Woods. And with that, that's it. So plenty of ways to contact us. Let us know what you think about these movies and trailers. We appreciate all your feedback. Please check out that video that Mr. Ray did here for last week's show. Let us know what you think. It's kind of a rough thing. And if you kind of like it, you know, sure, there's some things that need to be improved, but we already know that. But overall, I thought it was actually pretty nice. I really liked it.
Thank you.
So you did a good job. Good job. Pat on the back. So pop over to our website, COLmovies.com, or email us at COLmovies@gmail.com. Leave us a voicemail at 361-265-8255. That's 361-COL-TALK. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/COLmovies and Facebook at facebook.com/COLmovies. Please pop over to iTunes, leave us a 5-star review. We would appreciate it very much. Any final thoughts, sir?
Come back, Steven. We miss you.
Miss you, Steven. Hopefully your internets will actually work on a Thursday when we record the next show.
Mm-hmm.
But
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Raging Bull, Haywire, and The Cabin in the Woods. So for that, for me, for Fuzz, for Steven. Take care, everyone.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, dude.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.
End of line.